everybody. Welcome back to the second live stream for Storm Champ. It is day two, well, actually a week and 2 days into the coronavirus pandemic, and lots of stuff has happened in the last 24 hours, especially in the state of Michigan. So, Angie, Kim, welcome back to the live stream.
Hi.
Hello, hello.
So let's talk, Angie. First full day of lockdown in Michigan.
The second day wasn't so bad. Mm-hmm. I actually got up and went for a long walk at lunch today, and there were a lot of people out, so it almost didn't feel like such a bad thing. Even walked by a cop sitting in the parking lot of a library, and he wasn't stopping anybody. You know, it felt pretty normal, and I was like, maybe I can get used to this new normal.
Nice. Was the sun out? We didn't have any sunshine here.
The sun was out. People were walking. We were all avoiding looking at each other pretty much. Because
it's so weird, isn't it?
You don't want to stop and have a conversation with them. But definitely each of us taking our, 6 feet of distance from each other. So that was a little bit odd.
That's interesting. Yeah. Okay. So, Kim, you brought up yesterday, people are actually being more polite, right?
Yeah. Well, it's just more pleasant towards one another. Usually you might not even be bothered by the person walking past you, or you might have to feel like you just can't interact with them. And now it's almost an intentional, hey, we're in this together. I see you too, fellow human, you know?
Yeah. And that's interesting. And Angie, you're saying that people are completely avoiding each other and.
I mean, they briefly look, but you don't want to start a conversation kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because that means you're stopping and sharing airspace. Yeah. So, I walked, a couple miles back, but we're all trying to maintain distance between each other. As we're walking. And to the point where I'm going off into the road because I want to maintain my 6 feet of distance.
It's so weird. I stopped at a Dunkin' Donuts to get a coffee this morning, and there's signs everywhere that says please respect the 6 foot distance or whatever. I was like, that is so crazy.
Have you seen it on the floor where they put little hash marks or X's?
Yeah, I've seen pictures of that. Yeah.
Well, so it's so interesting. I was thinking about this the other day and having a conversation with my sorority sisters who we studied abroad in college, and we have a evolving worldview together. So it's really fun to bounce these ideas and thoughts about socialization off us. Mm-hmm. So we were talking about space and how the US has this massive kind of ego and assumption of a lot of bodily space. Unless you've lived in a metro tight area in the US where you've had to maybe ride public transportation, we spend a lunch hour walking between buildings downtown or whatnot with all of these people. Some people are really used to a little bit of space, and that 6 foot rule has really helped figure out when you see it on the floor, how far away that really means from folks, because I think the comfortability factor is different depending on where you're at or where you're from.
I'm really wondering how much of this is going to stick from now on, how much of this is just going to be a thing, between the 6 foot distance, between all the cleaning that happens. I was in another store today, and the cashier was wiping down everything between customers. It was crazy.
Really?
And it's is this going to be the norm now?
I don't know.
Yeah. That's an interesting thing to think about, because in the food industry, you have health code, and inspectors and things, and a lot of industries, of course. But I was having this conversation with my sister yesterday, who is now going on her second week of not working as a server in Chicago, Lakeview. And so she's out, I don't even know how many hundreds of dollars every week. And so filing for unemployment for a little bitty check is very interesting. She's like, okay, why would I do that? It's hardly anything. And I'm like, do something, don't do nothing. But I understand you're losing, $1,000 potentially over 7 days of work or more, wherever you're working. And so she's struggling a little bit with that. But she was mentioning how there was always rules and regulations around food safety. And, some of the times her bosses in different places don't really pass it for the inspector, but who really cares? The way we want to operate our business is the way we operate our business. And so these 70-year-old, 80-year-old people who own these little restaurants, who've been operating them for however long, several decades, under different city rules and regulations. And now here comes this federal instituted, you have to mandated change. they're still kind of scoffing at the authority around it, and they figure whatever, you know, like, I'm like, that's kind of a shitty place. Maybe you should not work there, but right. It's really easy to say that, you know, and you realize these rules and regulations are meant to kind of protect us. And if you just look at what we are doing to change our everyday social and personal behaviors because of this pandemic, then I think you're absolutely right. There's going to be some things that likely last in terms of prevention or safety after this whole thing kind of calms down again.
Yeah. And then you start getting into the conversations about regulation and like,
who's going to do that?
Yeah.
And right. Like, whose rules are they?
You know? Well, and then you got people that don't want to be more regulated too, right? Like,
of course.
So it's like, it's just, yeah, it's crazy. And like, it just makes me think about like, is this really going to be the norm for some of this stuff? You know,
I think really systems level. So like, you just got to keep me focused on which system, and we can analyze the hell out of it at any point. But yes, exactly.
And I think, I can't remember if we didn't talk about this yesterday. I think we talked about it on Sunday when it was just us, but like all the cleaning that's happening, like all the good germs that are being destroyed, like what is going to be the impact of that? Like, I really, really want to know.
Or how is the next generation going to be impacted by that?
Oh yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Right.
Like don't quote me on this, but didn't like peanut allergies, isn't that something new relatively because of,
right? Like it's newer. I think it's more prevalent now because like mm-hmm. of certain,
the label, you know, even exists.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause I mean, I don't remember as a kid, I don't remember as many peanut allergies as I can. No.
No. I mean, I shouldn't laugh because it's not the allergies. It's being told on like a sticker from your second grade teacher that you can't bring ants in a log in your lunch no more. Like what?
Yeah.
Who are you? Like what, you know, but anyways.
Yeah. So it does. It makes me wonder on the environmental impact of all of the actual cleaning that's happening and if that's sustained over time now, because that's as
an, well, so that's an interesting part of the conversation too, because if we're using cleaning supplies that are biodegradable or at least in sync with some natural byproducts, like I think that that might be one part of the question. There's been, you know, a lot of ecological changes, you know, like rivers, you know, clearing up and different ways that nature has sort of rebounded even in this short period that we've been experiencing across the globe because of this. And so I think that there are some awesome, I guess, miracles of nature that are going to happen. And I really would just hope that we would get to a point where what we do to make sure we're clean and well all is in harmony with nature, you know? It's spring, thing, though, so too. Many like, things are happening, you know?
You know, what was the first thing that was wiped out, though, was all, like, the Lysol and, you know, all the cleaning mm-hmm. supplies. That
right.
wasn't going to be the bio-friendly stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
People took whatever they could get.
Yeah,
and now they're being true. Used everywhere, you know? So, yeah.
You can, yeah, it's hard. There's a lot of, like, okay, what can I do personally to kind of protect myself and be safe and sanitary and not have it be Clorox bleach and Dow chemicals.
Maybe you could start using, we could start using some more essential oils and things like that, or natural.
I mean, you laugh about it, but I'm telling you what.
No, I mean, I use essential oils to clean the house.
Yeah. Listen, essential oils, if you want to sponsor the show, I'm down.
Yeah, exactly.
doTERRA. Hello, doTERRA.
Stormchamp.com. We're happy to have that conversation.
I mean, I think whatever you need to do to make yourself well, you're going to be way stressed out in a house that, you know, mm-hmm. you don't find ways to, I don't know. It's okay. I was saying it was springtime. So like spiders are coming in the house, or we're tracking dirt and mud all over the place. Like there's all sorts of like just environmental social things that are going to come into super hyper focus, spending so much time close proximity with your family or your loved ones. If you're all alone and kind of just hanging out in your apartment, you're going to be pacing back and forth, going to eat food in different places you're not used to. Like, how do we maintain a level of kind of like sanity and cleanliness as we continue to bumble through this? What I'm on like almost week two of this whole situation personally, but everybody's timeline started a little bit different, you know? So
I'm really curious to see how some of the industries are going to bounce back from this. I was talking to somebody this morning about how, you know, cloud was something that nobody thought could really be, you know, implemented within their workplace. And today it is, or we know that it's possible.
Yeah.
And what other industries are affected? Like I'm, you know, reading snippets here and there on Facebook about how breweries are making sanitary and local factories are creating masks and are we going to still have the relationship that we have with some of these outside countries in which we have typically gotten these sources from? Yeah. You know, like what does America look like in 15, you know, 3 weeks from now? Yeah. Are we going to realize that we can do it all at home, or are we going to continue to outsource? So that's kind of something that I'm really interested to see after this.
Yeah, we're kind of back into like a wartime, semi-wartime production kind of stuff where different businesses are picking up, you know, like you said, masks or ventilators or whatever, right?
Right. And I think we're probably poised to a pretty good position in the most optimistic of 2020s, where we've created social networking and structures that should be able to support sort of that collaboration at a level that will make a big difference, that will actually supply the hospitals with masks, that will actually help create support in these really vital places.
Well, the question becomes too, as we're talking about this, is like, I'm thinking about like the workforce itself. It's like, okay, so we can scale production, but do we have the talent to do the production anymore? Because we have moved away from a trade craft kind of mindset to you have to be in higher education, you have to go to college, you got to do all these things. And so is the skill set still there, or is there going to be some ramp there to, you know, for people to pick up the skills? You know, we don't have as many steel workers anymore. Yeah. We don't have machinists, we don't have carpenters and whatever.
So you're talking like physically, because I would argue like
work.
Yeah, the work can show up and have to sort of transform into like a different medium. So whereas you would typically go and take care of whatever project this equipment was going to be able to help you with, now you have to figure out a way to fix that, you know? And so I do think that self-resilience and I guess just ingenuity, people, the crafty people in this world are really going to like kind of rise to the top in this crisis. But also you're right. Like what do we do with some of the bits and pieces of what creates the essential like living environment of our world after all of this?
Well, it's even more like, are people going to be willing to do that kind of work again?
If is that what your question is?
Yeah, it's really more of my question. Yeah, so it's part of it. It's the
willing or not.
Yeah, it's the skill set to be able to do it. That's one piece. And then the willingness to be able to do it too. Like, I'll be honest, like, I'm not a carpenter. Like, I don't want to do that kind of work. It's just not what, like, I'm passionate about, right?
Sure. So,
and I'm not, you know, I'm just one example of like having, now granted, if I have to do the work, will I learn it and go all in? Sure, if I got to, right? Mm-hmm. But I just think about like the collective of, does society, American society, because I can't speak outside of America really.
Sure.
Does American society, could we go back to that big, huge mass production kind of like what China does for us today, right? Could we actually do that? And would the American workforce be willing to do that kind of physical kind of work? I don't know.
I think that they say they would, but, you know, I don't know.
You guys have a really interesting perspective too. Both ex-military, well, I don't know if ex-military is the right way to put it, but, you know, military experience, having worked for like the largest system and organization, you know, like that's a big, 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 big different perspective from people who have only worked at their uncle's grocery store all of their life, or who have, you know what I mean? And so I think that is something in context that we could probably unpack a little bit more and continue along with the conversation. But I do think there are some skilled workers, trades folks, I guess, that I know from my generation and even younger, especially in places like rural Michigan and Ohio and Indiana and all the Rust Belt states. You know, I also think about a lot of the younger people who have seen their parents struggle with health crises from things like mining, from things like fishing, from things like all of the other stuff that folks are really hardworking and exposed to making the country run. So I'm like, this would be a really interesting like calling home in some ways, in some regards, to some new generation of young people who are working to essentially rebuild America, you know?
Yeah,
especially because like they grew up with the information age, right? And we didn't. So maybe it would be really interesting to see if they do have this return to being more, not basic, but just common. I don't know how to say it.
How would simple. You say it?
I think it's more simple.
Simple, right? A simplified life.
How about like essential? Like just need, like
essential, right? You like you're creating to feed, you know, your table, your gardening, your sowing, you know, the land with seeds and creating crafts from with your hands. Like that's it's a trade I think that has been kind of lost since the information age has emerged upon us. And maybe this is nature's way of saying, hey, maybe this wasn't that bad of a thing and we should revisit this. I don't know.
What have you learned in that regard? Have you guys picked up any new hobbies or anything that's like kind of to that point, Angie, where you're like, oh, what is something I could just do for myself that normally I would have to rely on like the outside forces to at least assist me with, if not actually do?
Not yet. I haven't really yet, like except for maybe cooking, but I always have loved cooking and cooking at home. So not always having fast food available or things like that, you know, could I see impact me in the future. But then I don't have land either. So I don't really have a place to garden necessarily, nor is it the time.
Right. Well, you know, we're getting into it. I feel like laundry is a big deal for all of my city friends who usually go out to the laundromat. Like, is that considered an essential? Like, what do you do now if you can't get your clothing laundered? You know?
Right. Really interesting.
And what about if the laundromat's closed?
Right.
Or providing. Like, are laundromats still open?
I
don't know.
Come on, Facebook, tell me. Somebody tell me. But that's what I'm thinking. Like, there are things that everyday people are experiencing in different circumstances than maybe our own that I really want to try to keep tabs on as sort of like a social epidemiology, right? Like, let's study a few things that are actually happening in real time. And how does it look in your neighborhood? And what does it feel like being a part of somebody who has to, like, I don't know, maybe it'll be like wash and dry Sundays and we just have this whole community movement about coming together to clean our clothes. Like, I don't think it's going to be on the riverside on rocks or anything, but maybe, like, I don't know.
But that's the thing though. Like, we can't even come together to do that. Like,
yeah, you're right.
6 feet apart, everybody. Keep your dirty chonies over there. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, maybe that's better. I don't know.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, I don't. Oh man, I didn't even think about laundromats. Like, are they closed? Because like I'm bummed.
Can't be sanitary. It can't be safe, right? Like, you're kind of in close proximity when you're like doing laundry.
Unless they limit the people that come in.
Is it considered essential?
I mean. Have you washed your clothes in your bathtub yet?
No.
Have you ever? Because that's a fun experience. Like, if you got to wash your clothes at your house, we're gonna learn some things. Like,
I have washed it in the sink before.
Yeah,
put that washboard back out.
Well, I just wanted to go back to like my walk today.
Yeah,
it felt very normal. Like, even though there was social distancing happening, for a moment there, just walking, it felt like I could live with this, you know? And have any of you guys had any feelings where this, and that was the first time I've felt that way for the last week and a half, I would say, since everything's been going down. So, but I also did have a good conversation in which I connected with somebody virtually for the first time because I haven't really done that at all because I've been distancing myself. So I don't know if it's just, I'm in a better, lighter mood today. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It definitely doesn't feel normal still. Like, it's like trying to establish the new normal. That's been kind of difficult for me. Like, I knew I'm a creature of habit. I knew I have my routines, but man, this has been a great reminder of how into my routines I really was. And how the stability of them I really needed. Because right now, like, trying to figure, like, all the norms again has been, it's been super tough the last week to figure out the new norm, for sure.
Yeah. I felt like in maybe the last 48 hours, there are little pockets and places of my day that are kind of starting to fall into place. A little bit more routinely. And I've gotten immense pleasure and energy from that space. Like, oh, this is kind of a corner of, like, normal that might be reliable, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's definitely one of those things where if you're used to just kind of chaos, or if you don't have a certain structure in different parts and places of your life, understand boundaries with things and what you want best for yourself, never mind other people that you're around, you'll be eating all the snacks by 10:30 a.m. and wondering why the hell, you know, you can't go to the grocery store and you're Amazoning every other day, right? So it's like, you got to figure out your boundaries and you got to figure out your normal and what works best for you and the people that are directly related to you or close to you. So,
right.
I don't have to care for pets. I don't have to care for tiny humans. I like have to care for myself and I choose to care for the other folks in my life. So I'm like, if I need to, I'm like, damn it. I got to video call my mom every other day. Just kidding, mom. Not that you're watching, but I'm just saying, I care. And then I'm like, damn, I really got to put some energy towards that. And so when I find that I've organized three or four people I'm going to actually reach out and connect with today, I'm like, all right, momentum. Like things are kind of getting into place, you know?
Yeah. How are you dealing with that, Carlos, as a father, helping your children stay sane?
So establishing routines and different time frames to do things. For sure.
Yeah.
You know, they're still doing schoolwork. Though, you know, I tell you what, it's the last, so yesterday, was it yesterday that we found out the school was closed? Yeah, I think it was, man, it all blurs together now. So yesterday was the day I found out the schools were closed for the rest of the year. So figuring that out is like been interesting. But yeah, just establishing a routine with them, you know, giving them very specific things they have to do every day and kind of.
Do they understand it?
Yeah.
Are they too little to understand what's happening or?
No, they do. I mean, so you know, I have a 13, an 11 and a 7-year-old, right? So they understand, they understand what's happening. They understand the impact. They know this is unprecedented. Like no one, they get like adults don't even know how to do some of this stuff. Like,
yeah. I was going to say, do they talk to their peers or no? Like, do they connect on like video?
Oh yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Like they're connect. They're super connected with their friends. Well, you know, like my oldest and my youngest do, they're super connected with their friends. My son is kind of, he's in his own little world all the time. So that's, you know, but,
See, my niece is 15 and I don't think she gets the severity of it. Like, my brother was mentioning that she wanted to go visit her boyfriend or something. And my mom is diabetic. So she, you know, would be susceptible to the disease if it were to, you know, she were to catch it. I don't think it would be a good thing at all.
Right.
And so my brother's like, no, hell no, you're not going outside. You're not going to somebody's house where we don't know or can control who those people have seen.
Right.
But she's just, you know, like, oh, you're blowing it out of the water. Like, I'm not going to get sick. And I personally don't know. Well, actually, there is one person I know that has it, but in a different state. And so I don't know. It's just like, it's not registering for her. And I don't know if it's her being a 15-year-old that just.
Thinks they're invincible.
Yeah. Thinks they're invincible. Exactly. Yeah. So
interesting. No, they definitely know. And then like, you know, cause they feel the difference even with neighbors and stuff too. So like, it's pretty prevalent. Like they get it. But yeah.
Yeah. So it's going to be an interesting shift in transition when, school is in session, when baseball leagues can happen again, when, you know, mom and dad have to do certain things on the weekend or after work or whatever, or the gym, right? I don't know what your households look like, but just like a roommate or anybody else. And also our pet parents out there who have to maintain some sort of normal for their pets. Like, it's very interesting how the relationship with other people and the way that you kind of build or relate your day to one another, it has become like a primary focus.
Yeah, for sure. So I think this is a good segue. We asked a question yesterday on Instagram to we announced that Ask Us Anything, because we were going to do the live streams, and we had a comment from my girl Millie out in Cali. She said, for us overthinkers, it's a perfect time to get overwhelmed with thoughts. And so I think she wanted to get our thoughts around if you're an overthinker, which, you know, right here, I will raise my hand. I am a really bad overthinker.
Hello.
Yeah. So all three of us were really bad overthinkers. So how are we coping with the overthinking right now? Let's start with Kim.
Oh, no.
No pressure. No
that pressure. Is my response.
It was see, Derek's not here. He would have been the first one. So you can blame Derek.
Okay. Ooh, so This is a moment by moment struggle for me always on a regular day. So I think it's been really interesting once you get comfortable with how slow time has kind of become. For me, even just having mental sort of starts and stops and making sure that I really sort of frame whatever thought has become the most intense or most in focus for me, because I have wandering thoughts all of the time. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, sometimes in like the normal world prior to this moment in time, we were always so busy and distracted by so much going on and a lot of our calendars being full and these different priorities coming into play in different ways. A lot of that has sort of left the picture, and it's been up to us to organize our time. And that's an interesting challenge for somebody like me who really thrives on having boundaries for things. So I've basically instilled sort of block scheduling in my own personal world. And I'm like, okay, I work really well at probably an hour to like an hour and 45, an hour 50, because I need to build in breaks. I would never take a break if I didn't really have to. I'd just be living through all of the things on my list. But knowing my strengths is really helpful. And so making sure I can block schedule and knowing that I need a break has been a huge game changer just in life in general, but especially in this time where I can sit on a thought or on a task or anything and I just keep going in on it. So to answer your question in under 3 minutes, that's what I do.
but do you have to walk the fine line of distraction though, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess
because it's healthy, because yeah. You got to be like, how strong am I in my like real actual pursuit of this, or why am I feeling so intensely upset at mm-hmm. this, or why am I like, you know, so sad, like I'm never going to see my aunts 300 miles away from now again. Like, you know, you're like, okay, whoa, sit in it for about 2-3 minutes. But then like, let's move on in that thought and decide, like, are we actually going to tackle some things? Let's tangibly make, I'm an achiever, a to-do list, and like, make sure that you are very connected to your vision of what success means in this problem. But if I don't really maintain a lane and try to stay focused on that goal, I will just continue to roll and roll and roll and roll. And I'm snowballing over my own thoughts. And it's been 4 hours and I'm crying into my mashed potatoes. Like, why? You know, not good. Not good.
Okay. Angie, what do?
To stay present.
Oh, okay. There you go. You said the P word.
No, wait. Well, I'm sorry.
So how do you tackle the overthinking? And I think you just did.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's been really rough.
Yeah.
Like, I have been overthinking. I have been worrying about people. Listening to your advice, really, and just not, you know, taking it one step at a time and just narrowing it down to the point where I realize that nothing really is affecting me right here, right now. And I try to take it down to my breath. Sometimes I just need to breathe.
And
concentrate on what's like, I can feel myself sometimes going all over the place and I have to just like focus in, you know, like active listening, active, just being present as much as possible. Yeah. That's the only thing I can do, but I really honestly haven't been very good at it. So yeah. It's a daily struggle, like Kim said.
So is it you haven't been good at it previous to the Corona stuff or like now in the middle of it?
No, I think in my 20s, I definitely didn't have a grasp on being mindful. In my early 30s, for sure, not very good at it. Started practicing yoga, had started practicing this mindfulness, mind-body connection, where I can tell that I'm thinking about what I'm going to say to you guys before and not actually listening, you know? Yep. And so I actually have to just tune back in and focus on what you're saying and not thinking ahead and just being more present. So I didn't know how to do that when I was younger. I really didn't.
I don't think
I was really bad.
Now,
I'm like, I could use some tips on how to do that now.
Yeah. I mean, I've had bosses tell me like, you're moving too fast. Like you're just going too fast. Cause I'm a multitasker and I have that problem. Yeah.
I have that problem too though. What do you call that? Is there a word for that? Because like being, I guess it's sort of ADD.
It is probably ADD or ADD. I don't know. I know that I actually like multitasking, but it also means that I'm sacrificing being present with you. Yep. And so it's been hard. Like when I started learning Yeah, when I learned yoga and that mind-body connection, it really forced me to like stop and breathe and listen and be with you instead of being ahead of you. Mm. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's a skill set. Like that, you know, it's hard. Active listening, right? That's what they, I think that's what they call it. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. if you can catch yourself already formulating the response while somebody's talking, you're not active listening.
Ugh, but I have so many opinions and I have ideas. Like,
yeah,
and you know, and like you just see it.
Yeah.
No, I know it. That's exactly it. That's why people take notes even on casual. Like, mm-hmm. I totally understand being from like the social sciences, how human behavior, we get in our own way all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think that we're gonna like, this is a really prime example of like lesson number one, after a week of being in your house, like you're gonna have to slow your mind down. Like you're gonna have to like pull some things back and think about, all right, I'm probably going to like, cause sleep is a problem for me. Sometimes I sleep 8 hours, 9 hours, 10 hours these days, 12 hours. I'm like, Kim, mm-hmm. you can't be doing that every day, like of the week. Cause you just don't got shit going on. Like, come on, like, yeah. you know? And so you got to think about like how you spend your time. I want to sleep for 7 hours today. And then for the rest of the time, I want to fill it at least mindfully with the thing I'm focusing on. And then yeah. I just stick to those, you know, block schedules. I don't know. I feel like that works for me.
Yeah. And I think for me, so yeah, for me, presence is number one. Like that's the biggest, and I think that's how I answered the question on Instagram was, you know, presence is your number one weapon against overthinking mm-hmm. and staying right. present and being present and active listening and actually living in the moment. Because yeah. what you realize once you get there, once you get into that point, like, man, it's just like things open up. You hear people differently. You see the world differently. Like it's just crazy if you can actually get to that point. And it's fleeting. Like it's something you have to do all the time.
The moment is all we have.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And once you realize that and you can get there, then like anxiety around the future or regret around the past, like all that becomes mm-hmm. kind of null and void.
Absolutely. Well, it's not really, I mean, you can't go back to the past and you can't go back to the, you can't move forward into the future. All you have is right here.
Right.
So
absolutely.
I want to reread The Power of Now.
Yeah. And actually I was wanted to talk about books too. Cause that's definitely one of my favorites I want to pass on today. But, right. So then the other thing is if I'm overthinking about something or someone, it's recognizing and giving space for that. Like you said, Kim, you know, give yourself a few moments to kind of live it, feel it, feel what you're going to feel. Right. And then I try to go even farther back as like truly trying to understand what am I feeling right now? Like right. name, like we talked about like so many times we talked about this on the show, name the feelings like, okay, mm-hmm. you know, regret or hurt or lack or whatever it is. Right.
What's the source?
Yeah. Like, why are you feeling what you're feeling and really mm-hmm. try to get deep into it, you know? And if you can get to the like core of it and name all of it, then you'll end up feeling like, okay, you can control it then. Like, or it starts to take back control of mm-hmm. instead of letting that feeling overwhelm you, then you're like, you recognize it kind of objectively and kind of piece it, you know, pull it apart.
You own it.
And you own it. Yeah, absolutely. You own it for sure.
Isn't that what some victims do as well, as they can acknowledge that this happened to them and they kind of own it?
Sure. Absolutely.
And get over it, can get over it because they actually say it out loud.
Yeah.
You know? As like non-licensed folks, I think we generally as humans have this experience where if you can understand, name what it is that's happening and then understand more and more what that is and maybe the steps that have led you to feel so strongly in that way, you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. I mean, whether you're a victim of something or you have, you know, a challenge that you want to overcome, like labels and the way that we kind of just box ourselves in certain things, you thought you were this type of person and that type of person. And now this experience has led you to feel differently about mm-hmm. the end goal. Like, how do I kind of rectify that? And so, I was gonna say, it's very, words have power. And I think it's something that, we need to refine in communication with each other in general, but also during this time when I think we're going to have to take a hard look at what is it that I'm feeling right now mm-hmm. towards myself, towards the situation, towards my dog that will never go to the bathroom outside, but will always pee on the floor. Like whatever is happening that is driving you to like your wit's end, like think about why you're feeling what you're feeling and what that might mean for your mm-hmm. life, you know?
Well, you could relinquish some of the power that it holds over you too.
And take your power back. Exactly.
Yeah. Take your power back.
And I think it's really important too, to the words have power, especially the words you say to yourself. Like those are the most powerful and sometimes the most cutting words.
Cheers. You know, when,
I mean, think about it. Like, think of the internal voices you have and the things that you say to yourself. Would you ever say that to somebody you care about?
Mm-hmm. Never. No.
Ever would you ever talk to somebody like that you care about?
Flip it and be like, what would I tell somebody else if they were standing in my, and I have to do that weekly, if not daily. I'm sure if I was nicer to myself, I would do that. So
I have conversations with myself almost every week where I think about someone that I love and I think about the things that I love about them that I think are beautiful. And I'm like, why can't you talk to yourself like that? Like, why is it that it's so easy for you to have this positive conversation with somebody about them, but that you can't have that conversation with yourself all the time?
Yeah. So, and then figuring, so you get to that point, you can start talking to yourself differently. And then even asking yourself, if you, like, this is one of the ultimate things, if you can get to it, is what do I need in this moment? And piece it together. Like, okay, what do I really need right now in this moment to help me get over this, whatever it is, anxiety, like fear, whatever.
Right.
And you may not be able to get that thing, right? But at least if you name it and you recognize it and you honor it, then that starts to pull your power back to you.
Right.
And starts to, that's where presence comes in.
I was going to say, it brings you right back to presence. And so your mindfulness can be with it. Yeah. I was going to say, before you really get into that, that space, like, you really have to like respect your own voice, right? Like, you have to understand that and trust that you know what's best for you, you know, in that regard.
Yeah. And see, part of it too is, and when you're in an emotional state like that, sometimes you may not know what's best for you. And it's recognizing that as well. It's like, this may not be the best idea at the moment, right? Ugh,
messy humans. Come on now.
Yeah. But when you can start to pull it back and start to look at it objectively, then that's a different level of presence. It's a different level of awareness. And to me, self-awareness is the key to freedom. It really, really is. Like, it will, your own self-awareness will light you up and, help you get to places that you've never been before.
Absolutely. Hey, Carlos, before we leave today's conversation, we should talk about what books we're reading or what books are on our reading list. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I do. I wanted to follow up with that. So I'll start. So I'll put myself on the spot first. So I'm actually not reading anything right now, which is really weird because I was doing really well with reading books. The one book I want to recommend to people, just because we're talking about presence, is The Power of Now by, Angie, help me with the author.
Kurt Tolle.
Yeah. The Power of Now. That's, that book, I'm in the habit now of reading that book at least once a year. And I think it's one of those books that maybe I should read every 6 months to remind myself. And it's about the presence. It's about the moment, the now moment. It's about how you can get there. And it'll basically make you realize, like, everything that is not part of the now is a lie. It really, it really is. And so, definitely would highly recommend that one. If you're having some problems with this time period, with overthinking, with staying present, like, that is a book that will, I think, will open up your eyes. You may not agree with it all, but I think you'll get some good kind of tidbits out of that one for sure.
Angie, what about you?
I'm reading a couple of books right now. So, I mean, I'm audio listening to Brené Brown, Dare to Lead.
I love Brené Brown.
Yeah. And I really, that's really insightful. As I've been starting my new business and launching off on my own, so I'm trying to just read a few books that will help me be a better leader. And then the other book I'm reading is the one that you recommended, Carlos, Breaking the Habit of You. There was a point where I couldn't put it down, and then I did put it down and I got too busy with my life. So I need to pick it back up and finish it because I'm halfway through it. But it's the concepts in it, everything in it is just speaking to my soul. Yep. So I really can't
change my life. Seriously.
I can't wait to finish. I think I'm on chapter seven now.
That one changed my life.
So,
yep.
It's just, but then this happened And it's kind of like, wait, I did not attract this and I did not create this reality. So why is this happening? So I'm curious to finish the book and see what he says about outside influences kind of dictating what happens in your life and your sphere.
Yeah.
So
when you're done, we should talk about that for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. We should definitely have a podcast on that.
Absolutely. That's a great book.
Maybe Kim, you can read it too. So we can all talk about it.
Perfect. Well, the book I just finished maybe a week before this whole thing got super serious is titled You Are Awesome. It comes from Neil Pashrisha, I think is how you say it.
Oh, I have that book. I just haven't started it.
It's super easy read. I think it swears, so you probably don't want to read it with your kids or anything like that. I think it's a little like, it's very conversational, at least for the conversations I have. And it's really cool because he's a great author in general. 1,000 Awesome Things, I think, was the first thing that he wrote. And his story in general is just very inspiring and kind of along Storm Champ's lane anyways. His website, he also has a podcast, like a lot of really great content that pulls together some really smart folks out there who've written in this lane of sort of resilience and grit and growth. And so, he also wrote The Happiness Equation, now that I'm thinking about it. But so the title is You Are Awesome, and it goes through like maybe 9 different chapters of just different rules that you'll have to sort of enforce in your life as you come across navigating change, wrestling with failure, and living an intentional life is what the book says. So it's very like self-helpy in a way, but it's also very like realistic and conversational. And it just kind of points out some things that maybe, and I should maybe read it again now in the shadow of this whole thing. It puts things into perspective, right? Because we all go through little struggles and storms or whatever you want to say about it. But this book here kind of like made it into a really easy, I think it was like 8 or 9 rules or, you know, things that will help keep you in line with the fact that you are awesome. So,
yeah, and we'll be sure to include links to the books in the posting for this this episode when we post it to the podcast feed. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I'd be curious to talk tomorrow about what you just hit on, Kim, about living an intentional life, and leave this conversation with the thought, like, do you believe that this situation is going to make us all have like want to live a more intentional life? I don't know.
I think the situation gives us the choice.
Yeah.
It's up to you whether you want to take that choice or not.
Sure. Right.
And that's a great topic for tomorrow. We should see that one. Yeah, I wrote that down so we don't forget. So,
okay.
All right, everybody. Thanks so much for tuning in. Be sure to check out our website at stormchamp.com. There we have links to all our social media and all our past podcast episodes. Have a listen, leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Kim, Angie, as always, it's been a pleasure.
See you guys tomorrow.
Hi. Nice to talk to you again.
Thank you so much.